The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Wednesday, October 30th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, and you got me for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. One of those not dreary days, but just not pretty days outside, right? Just a little overcast and temperature's fine, but lots to get to on the show today, as we'll have a couple of great guests joining us throughout the two-hour program. Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 will be with us later on this hour at 2:30. We'll get caught up on the Georgia Bulldogs as they get set for the Florida game, right? The neutral site game that'll take place in Jacksonville, whatever they're calling it nowadays. I still know it as the world's largest cocktail party. And so we'll talk to Jordan about that and what we need to know for Georgia football and get any updates on the basketball side of things there in Athens. And then in hour number two, it's Double D Wednesday, right? It's Double D Wednesday, which means Daryl Dapprich will be with us. We'll be talking to him about all things Auburn athletics, football, and basketball. Excited to have him back on the show. That'll be at 3:15 to 3:45. So Double D coming up in hour two. Jordan Hill in about 30 minutes. Up until then, between then, around then, though, phone lines are open on this Wednesday afternoon. Would love to hear from you on today's show. What's on your mind? What do you want to talk about today? 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. You can also shoot me a text in the on-the-line text box. That number is 334-784-1067. And as we do every single Wednesday here on the show, we begin to look ahead, right? We begin to look forward and flip the page and look at what's coming up in college football for this weekend, because there are some really, really good games. And while it may be considered a down week in the SEC in terms of games that have major, major impact, I still think there are some sneaky good ones. And if college football has showed us anything, it's the fact that no game should be overlooked. No game should be shrugged off and say, oh, that's terrible. Those teams are horrible. That's not going to be any fun. Maybe not so much in the Massachusetts-Mississippi State game, but everything else, I think you can take it to the bank that it's probably going to be a good matchup. And so in terms of SEC games, I guess the one that most people will have their eye on in terms of a playoff implication would be Ole Miss and Arkansas. That'd be my guess, just because I do think Ole Miss, right, 7-point favorite at Arkansas this weekend, 11 a.m. on ESPN, so right after College game day. I guess this one, because Ole Miss is technically still alive, right, still alive for a college football playoff berth. Their two losses being Kentucky and LSU. They bounced back with a win over Oklahoma last week. They've got Arkansas, and then they play Georgia next week. And so my thought process on this is, if Ole Miss wins, right, if they beat Arkansas, and let's just say they win out, that includes a win over Florida, Mississippi State, and then Georgia, would that be enough to get them in? I don't know. I would like to think so, right? I would like to think that with the resume that they have, which isn't great, I think a win over Georgia would carry a lot of weight. That team, the number two team in the country right now. So in terms of a team that could stay alive this season, Ole Miss is the answer. But I think you also have to look at the game 6:30 on ABC Saturday night inside of Williams-Brice Stadium, where one of the hottest teams in college football right now goes to South Carolina. Texas A&M is a top 10 team, rolls into Columbia trying to keep their entire season alive. And I just got a text about it. Yeah, South Carolina gets Texas A&M Saturday. Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, man, look at this A&M team. Did anybody have this? And I think Christian and I may have dipped into this a little bit yesterday. Did anybody have this? The fact that Texas A&M looked horrific against Notre Dame in the opener. Terrible. Had chances to win and couldn't do it, and let a Notre Dame team that I still don't know if they're any good or not, let them beat them on opening weekend. Since then, they haven't lost. And most of their games have not been all that close. Right? They beat Florida by 13. Arkansas was a close one. Killed Missouri. Did okay against Mississippi State and pulled away from LSU. And so this A&M team has everything in front of them. And a week from yesterday, so 6 days from now, we're going to get our first college football playoff rankings. And we're going to see how much that loss impacts them. We're going to see how much that loss affects them. But it's a loss in non-conference play. And it's also a loss in week one of the season. So Texas A&M has got to be licking their chops and looking at this thing saying, wow, we have everything in front of us. We have South Carolina this weekend, New Mexico State at Auburn, and then the game against Texas that a lot of people have talked about. And that's not going to be an easy game on Saturday against South Carolina. Got people telling me they're picking South Carolina to beat, so that's what that text was about. They're picking South Carolina to beat Texas A&M, and I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt it at all. Look at that South Carolina team. This could be one of the better 4-3 teams in college football, actually. Right? They just didn't look good against Ole Miss. They should have beaten Alabama, right? Had every chance to do it. And then they beat Oklahoma like everybody else has, almost. And South Carolina doesn't have anything to play for, right? They still have three top 25 teams on their schedule and Vanderbilt, who was top 25 a week ago. They have A&M, Vandy, Missouri, Clemson. South Carolina's schedule doesn't get any easier. And they have absolutely nothing to play for except playing spoiler. South Carolina could be that team that plays absolute spoiler on multiple teams on their way to a college football playoff, or at least trying to get to a college football playoff. And it starts with Texas A&M this weekend. You still have Missouri on there, which I don't think anybody realistically thinks Missouri is a college football playoff team with their record or their resume. But they do play at Clemson at the end of the year, a team that nobody's talking about. It has done nothing but win since their embarrassment in the opener. So look out for South Carolina, who would you say is playing their best ball right now? Other than the win against Kentucky and the almost win against South Carolina. I mean, man, I want you to look at their three losses. South Carolina lost to LSU by 3, and they should have won. They lost to Alabama by 2 and should have won, so a combined 5 points in games they should have won. And Ole Miss just got them. What would a world look like if there was a South Carolina team running around out there with just one loss, with wins over a top 20 LSU team at the time and a top 10 Alabama team at the time, with a top 10 team in A&M coming into town? Could you imagine? Could you imagine? So, all things considered, that 4-3 record's not that bad. And I think that's a huge game this weekend. If Texas A&M were to lose, I think they're still alive. And it all comes back to this conversation, again, as we are flipping the page this today to what's coming up this weekend. And I think there's even bigger games outside of the SEC and college football, but we'll get there. It all comes back to, is it advantageous or disadvantageous? Is that how you say that? We'll roll with it. Is it better or worse to be in the conference championship game? If you are in a Power Four conference, SEC, Big Ten, ACC, and Big 12, does it help you or hurt you to play in your conference championship game? Because you're about to find out. We're going to know this season, right? We're going to know when teams start punching their tickets to a conference championship game and the playoffs continue to roll out their rankings, right? Their rankings. And we're going to find out exactly whether it's a good thing or a bad thing to play that extra game, that extra weekend. And I'm not just talking about potential injuries or exhaustion or traveling or anything like that. I'm strictly talking from a win and loss perspective, which is why I've continued to say I don't think conference championship games should be a part of this. I don't think they, unfortunately, they still matter. And I say unfortunately because how much are you going to gain from winning it versus lose by losing it? Does that make sense? I do believe that there will come a time, could be this year, could be in the next few years, where you see teams that need a win in the conference championship game to get to the playoff, or at least boost their ranking, if you will. But also believe that there will be teams that miss out on the college football playoff because they will be punished for the extra loss. Right? They'll be punished for an extra loss that in a game they probably didn't want to play in anyway. And that's getting a lot deeper into, and we've had those conversations before, but now it's all about to start happening. Like, all of this stuff that we talked about when all these changes with the college football playoff started happening, it's all about to start unraveling in front of our eyes. Which is why it's important to look at these games around the Southeastern Conference and around college football, right? Like Kentucky-Tennessee on Saturday night. Tennessee should roll. They should roll. But what if they don't? Then we're talking about two-loss SEC teams that we all thought was a gimme to make it to the playoff. We all thought that was a guarantee. Oh, ain't no way a two-loss SEC team gets left out of the college football playoff, right? How big of fools were we? Because look around college football as we zoom out a little bit here on ESPN Radio. Look, zoom out a little bit at what's happening around the SEC. And you know, I think this is good for us. I do. I think this is good for us in SEC country because I'm not going to say that we've been blind or that we've been, I don't know, hesitant to look around us and at least listen to the other conferences and the other fan bases and other programs, but this year is forcing us to do that. Because there are some really good teams that don't wear the yellow and blue patch. That don't wear the logo in the circle that says SEC. There are really good teams in the Big Ten. There's about four of them right now. There's some really good teams in the ACC. I think there's two or three. And there's some really good teams in the Big 12. I think there's three or four. And I think they all have a chance to compete for a national title. And so I think this year has forced us to at least respect other conferences and respect other programs and at least keep an eye on what's going on. Because, man, look at some of these games outside of the conference this weekend. You have the biggest game in the country happening at 11 a.m. for the big noon kickoff on Fox, number 4 Ohio State, and number 3 Penn State. You have a 6-1 Buckeyes team with their only loss coming to Oregon by one possession. Right, that one possession loss, 1 point to be exact, 32-31. I hate the term good loss, but that's as close as you can get. Right, a rogue team or a rogue game, top 4 team, and you lose by a point. That's as close as you can get. But the problem I have with Ohio State is coming out of a bye week, right? You come off a loss, and you had a bye week, and you were at home, and that's how you performed against Nebraska? That's what you have? That's all you've got? And I don't want to hear the talk of, oh, they just didn't get up for the game. They weren't ready. They weren't motivated for the Huskers. Why? Why are you not motivated? Why are you not ready? Don't give me that. I don't want to hear that. Because this could be an elimination game for the Buckeyes. Could be. We don't know. We still don't know. And if you look at that Ohio State schedule, yeah, Michigan's on there, but they're terrible. Purdue's on there, they're terrible. Northwestern's on there, they're terrible. But then there's that team out of Bloomington that's looming really large for the Buckeyes right now, the Hoosiers of Indiana. At Ohio State, you've got to be thinking, we have to win at least one of these two against Penn State or Indiana. And my question, I guess an open-ended question to you is, does a two-loss Alabama team get in? A two-loss Ohio State team get in? I had Alabama on my mind there. Because I compare it to the same question. Does a two-loss Alabama team get in? Does a two-loss Georgia team get in? Does a two-loss Oregon get in, if that's even possible for them at this point? You know what I mean? Like, I can't get past the fact of logo bias. I can't get past it. And maybe that's just me being stubborn. Maybe that's just me refusing to give the benefit of the doubt to the decision makers of college football, the TV networks, and those that make decisions behind closed doors. Maybe I'm just being stubborn and being a jerk. I don't know. But until they prove to me that they're going to do the right thing and not just pick big names, big teams, and big logos because it brings in the most money, I just don't trust it. I don't trust the process. I don't trust the process. And it's funny to say that this time of year, because it seems to be a growing trend in multiple big, important things. Some more important than others, of course. But I don't know. I would love to sit here and tell you confidently, ladies and gentlemen, I would love to sit here and tell you that this is 100% an elimination game for the Buckeyes. You don't beat Penn State, you're out. You don't win out, and you're out. Right? That's what we had with the BCS. That's what you even have with a 4-team playoff. But here we are in year one of this 12-team playoff that's ultimately going to grow bigger. And regular season games seem to not matter as much. There's not as much value each and every Saturday. And nobody asked for that. Nobody wanted that. I think we wanted a little bit of grief, maybe a little leniency, a little leeway, maybe is the word to use. Right? The BCS era, if you didn't go undefeated, you didn't sniff making the national championship game. Didn't sniff it. Didn't get anywhere close most of the time. In the 4-team playoff, it was like, okay, now we can breathe a little bit, right? You've taken the 10-point lead. All right, now we're comfortable again, right? Now you can afford a loss if it's to the right team and in the right way, yada yada yada. But now it seems like we were in a good spot. And then we've gone a little too far. We said, oh, what else can we get? What else can we do? How else can we make this better? And now you take a top 3 game in the country, or I guess a top 3 matchup in the country of Ohio State and Penn State. One team's undefeated, the other's a one-loss team, and the result doesn't even matter. The result doesn't matter because both teams can still make the playoff. Even if they lose. And I don't know how to fix that. I don't know where we went wrong in all of this. But regardless, I am excited for this game on Saturday. It's at Penn State. Pretty sure they're doing the whiteout. It's not at night, so it won't get as crazy, but it'll be loud. It'll be packed out. And definitely one of the biggest games in college football this weekend. We got to get to break. I went way long. We'll talk some more about this and what's happening around college football this weekend. Plus, talk Auburn and Vandy this Saturday. It's going to be a good one. I'll tell you what. Then Jordan Hill of Dawgs 247 will be with us coming up at 2:30. So, time for you to get in on the show. 334-321-1390. We're back after this on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
We continue on here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. Give me a call. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Just you and me today here in the studio. But we're going to have some great guests on the show, including Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. He'll be with us in about 10 minutes or so. So that's how long you got to get in if you want to be a part of the show. 334-321-1390. And looking at other games around college football this week, and I mentioned Indiana earlier, right? A team that is having one of the greatest seasons they've ever had, right? 8-0 overall this season, 5-0 in the Big Ten. They are hanging around in that Big Ten conference, and talk about playing spoiler, right? Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon are all in that top three. Then there's Indiana just doing their thing and haven't really done a whole lot up to this point in terms of, like, monumental wins, I guess credible wins, if you will. But they've got Ohio State on that schedule coming up in a few weeks. But they do play at Michigan State Saturday afternoon, so keep your eyes out on that one. Kansas State is a team that you need to keep your eye on because they're 7-1 overall, 4-1 in the Big 12. Their only loss is at BYU. And their schedule's not terrible, and they end the year at Iowa State. And if you're unfamiliar with what's happening with Iowa State, they're in Ames, they're undefeated. They're a top 15 team. Kansas State's top 20. Iowa State has yet to lose a game. And their schedule is not all that difficult. Texas Tech, Kansas, Cincinnati. They have Utah, which again, Utah's 4-4 this year, so nothing crazy there. You're talking about a potential matchup on November 30th between the Wildcats and the Cyclones that could end up being, what, a potential win-and-you're-in type of game? Or maybe we don't know, because one team could be undefeated and the other team can only have one loss. If Iowa State trips up between now and then, yeah, I'd say it could very well be a win-and-you're-in type of game because of how the Big 12 has played out so far and how many teams from that conference can get in, right? They still have their conference championship. ACC's got the same sort of thing going on right now. Clemson gets Louisville this weekend. Shouldn't be overly difficult. Pittsburgh and SMU, I think, is one of the best games of the weekend in terms of just pure matchup, in terms of ranking, in terms of record, and in terms of playoff implications. Two top 20 teams, both out of the ACC, both undefeated in the ACC. SMU, just the one loss out of conference to BYU. And Christian and I talked about this yesterday. That's another one of those where if you're giving credit for a loss, that's one of them. That's one of the games to do it for. And, man, some of these conferences are going to start, I hope anyway, I hope they're going to start solving it a little bit, and not the conferences, the games will do it, thankfully, but we're going to start learning a whole lot more. Look at that ACC for a second. Clemson, Miami, SMU, Pitt, all of them undefeated in conference play and a combined two losses. Two teams are full out undefeated. The other two have just one loss out of conference, Clemson being Georgia and SMU being BYU. So that's going to figure itself out, I think. Right, I think. Other conferences that have a lot happening. Mentioned the Big 12 just a second ago. BYU is there. They're undefeated. Iowa State's there. They're undefeated. This is in conference. You have Kansas State as a one-loss team. Do you know who the other one-loss team is out of the Big 12? Do you know who that is in terms of conference play? Overall, they're 6-2, and they're making their first appearance in the top 25 in quite some time. It's Deion Sanders and the Colorado Buffaloes. They have a chance to be a dark horse to do something special. The problem for them, the problem for Colorado, is they already lost to Kansas State. They played the one of the teams at the top, and they were unable to get it done. They lost that one 31-28. Their other loss is to Nebraska out of conference. So the teams ahead of them for Colorado, for those of you that are Colorado fans, they don't play them. They don't play BYU or Iowa State. So it's kind of out of their hands. They got to win out if they want to make some noise, if Colorado wants to be there. And oh my goodness, tell me, somebody convince me that this won't happen. If Colorado wins out and the top three teams in the Big 12 start beating each other, which I'd have to compare their schedules, and I'll try to do that here mentally. BYU doesn't play each other or play anybody in the top four of the Big 12. So literally Iowa State and Kansas are the only ones. So but Colorado probably can't get to the Big 12 if I'm just kind of doing some mental math really quick. But if there's any possibility, this is what I want you to convince me of. If there's any possibility that Colorado could make it to the college football playoff, are we convinced that ESPN is going to do the right thing and not put them in? Give me a break. The coverage they've given Deion and Colorado the last handful of years, if there's any slim chance they could get away with it, I guarantee ESPN would put them in if they could get away with it without the public completely ripping them apart. All right, let's get to break. Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, he joins us after this. We're talking all things Georgia Bulldogs.
You are on the line with Jacob Goertz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one on the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. And as we always do on Wednesdays at 2:30, we get to the phone lines because we talk to our friend Jordan Hill from Dogs 247 live in Athens, Georgia, as he joins us every week to talk about all things Georgia athletics. Jordan, how are you, man? Crossover season is it's about to kick in pretty hard, my friend.
Oh, for sure, but we love it. Jacob keeps us busy with football and basketball, and everything's good. Getting ready for another trip to Jacksonville this weekend, and excited to see what happens down there.
Yeah, are you a fan of this game in general, and then it being played neutral site rather than it being home and home? I know that's been a big conversation here of the last couple of years, right?
Right, and there was actually news earlier Wednesday that in 26 the game is going to be played in Atlanta, and in 27 it's going to be in Tampa because there are renovations to the Jaguars Stadium. I'll say I'm not a fan of it per se. I think it would be great to have these games at least every once in a while in Athens and Gainesville, but I understand it. I mean, the financial ramifications for both schools, the money they bring in, I'll be interested to see both teams get for playing in Mercedes-Benz Stadium and Raymond James Stadium. And again, we've kind of talked about this on our podcast that, you know, we're getting ready for a revenue sharing world. And I'm never going to really argue against thinking that brings in more revenue, especially with a series like this that has that history of being at a neutral site. You know, it's not like you're pivoting a series that's always been home and homes to going on the road. So yeah, on the whole, I would rather see these be played on campus, but I understand the thinking behind it, and I get always trying to bring in more revenue given what's coming up down the road.
Yeah, I'm a fan of college football because that's, I feel the home atmospheres and the environments and the tailgating and all that, I feel like that's what it's, unfortunately, it's one of the few things nowadays that separates college football from professional football. And I know this game's been played neutral site forever, it seems like, but I think it would be really cool to have this game either in Athens or in Gainesville when these teams are at their peak.
Definitely, and I think it's something that both sides sort of understood when it came to, you know, they knew there was going to be a break because of the renovations going on at Everbank Stadium, and I think they knew that they couldn't bring it back to campus. It was played for 2 years in 94 and 95 when the stadium was being upgraded when the Jaguars were joining the NFL. I think they had the wherewithal to know we can't go on campus because if we do, we're never going to be able to take them off campus. So again, I understand it. I do also kind of appreciate the history here. I mean, I think it's been played every year in Jacksonville since like 1944, besides those 2 years I mentioned when the Jaguars were joining the NFL. So I do kind of appreciate, you know, that there is history of going to Jacksonville. And I know for a lot of Georgia fans, you know, this is sort of like an annual vacation that they go down to the islands and stay for the weekend and go to the game and stuff like that. So it's not my biggest pet peeve when it comes to this game being played at a neutral site. And again, knowing what we've got coming up when it comes to revenue sharing, I honestly can't argue very much against the decisions that were made.
Well, before we dive into the Georgia-Florida matchup that's going to happen this Saturday afternoon, need to get any information we can coming out of the bye week for Georgia. Of course, they were able to take down Texas a couple of weeks ago. They were off this past weekend, and it seems like around college football, any bye week is a blessing given how all these teams are upsetting people and injuries are happening all over the place. I mean, bye weeks are so valuable right now. And so any news that you can share with us, Jordan, coming out of the bye week for this Georgia football team?
I think the biggest thing is just going to be checking in on this team's health, which we'll get a better sense of that on Wednesday night with the first availability report. Sounds like Tate Ratledge and Jordan Hall, two of the guys who have been banged up, and Jordan Hall actually hasn't played yet this season. I expect them to play on Saturday, which is a boost. Tate Ratledge is starting right guard. Jordan Hall, a defensive tackle, who's actually from Jacksonville, so I'm sure it would mean a lot for him to play in this game. Watching to see about Smile Munden. I don't anticipate he's going to be able to play, but we'll see what his availability is on that report. He's been dealing with a foot injury that even goes back to last year. And also seeing on Branson Robinson, I think it'd be very valuable to get him back. He's been dealing with an MCL strain, very hard to sort of project how long he would be out. Kirby didn't say a ton as far as if he would be available, but other than that, I mean, that kind of run of the mill when it came to the bye week, just guys trying to get healthy, guys gearing up for essentially the second half of the season with what Georgia's got left on the schedule. I think they feel like they made the most of the bye week, and they want to show that on Saturday in Jacksonville.
We're wrapping up October, flipping into November as we play this weekend's games. And Jordan, I don't think anybody had this predicted back in Dallas when we were at SEC Media Days that at this point in the season, only one team would remain undefeated in the SEC, and it would be Texas A&M of all teams. I mean, I don't think anybody had that back in Dallas.
No, not at all. I will say I had A&M as one of my surprise teams, but I mean, I think that still amounted to like fourth or fifth in the SEC, so I can't really totally pat myself on the back. But no, I mean, I think it's made for a really interesting year. Again, understanding that this is a 12-team playoff and understanding that we have no precedent for what exactly that looks like. I mean, I think about the chaos that's going to be going on Tuesday with this very first 12-team playoff projection put out by the committee, because I think that we might have a good sense of what we think we're going to see, and it could be totally different than what they actually lay out. But no, I think it sets up for a very interesting end of the season. And what's funny, there's been a lot of conversation about tiebreakers and hypotheticals, and you know, this could leave a team out of the SEC title game. And you know, I look at it from Georgia's perspective. Let's say they were left out of the title game but still make the playoff. I do think that there is a piece of Kirby Smart that would want them in Atlanta, but when you look big picture, it might be better off for the team not to play. You haven't played one less game if you feel good about your chances to make the playoffs. So I think it sets up for a really interesting close to this season, and I'm never going to shy away from that. I mean, I always want to see things be exciting, and especially see these games in late October, in November, really matter.
And I think I count, I guess, not realistically, but theoretically, 8 teams in the SEC that still have what you would call a legitimate chance at the college football playoff. Now, I think Missouri, Ole Miss are definitely on the outside. Alabama could be on that picture as well in terms of outside looking in. But LSU, Tennessee, Texas, Georgia, and Texas A&M, I mean, all of those teams still have a shot. And when you look at this Georgia schedule in the last couple of games, they still play Ole Miss and they still play Tennessee, and you still have to take care of Florida and Georgia Tech.
Definitely. And the point you made right there, Jacob, that I really like is that some of those games are involving two teams that are still very much alive. I mean, it's not a situation where, say, a team like Georgia needs another game to go a certain way. You know, a lot of these teams, their playoff hopes rest within their own control. You know what I mean? I think that these games for. Then you think about Texas A&M toward the end of the season. You know, if one of those teams winds up getting left out, yeah, they may feel like, oh, well, we should have been in and this team shouldn't have been in. But, you know, for what I think this is setting up for, I don't know that there's going to be many teams that can't look in the mirror and say, well, if we would have just beat this team late in the year, we would have made it in. And, you know, you can't really plan that. I mean, it's just sort of how the schedule fell and how some of these teams have wound up playing. And there could still wind up being a case where someone kind of gets left out just because there was no other option. But I like the way this sets up. I think it's going to be a very exciting close to this regular season.
I just want to see it come down to wins and losses on the field, which is what you just talked about. I mean, as long as it comes down to that where, yeah, you look at the end and you're like, man, if we would have beat this team 3 weeks ago, we would have been in. But, oh, well, maybe there's next year. Like, I want it to be that way rather than whatever ends up happening. You saw the drama last year. There could be drama this year. Really looking forward to how all of this is going to play out over the next few weeks. But for this Georgia team, before you look at Ole Miss and Tennessee, you do have Florida coming up this weekend, neutral site, 2:30 on ABC. And Jordan, I'm curious what you think about this Florida team that everybody wrote off before the season even started. The year started out really bad, but all of a sudden, here come the Gators.
Yeah, I think Billy Napier and his coaching staff and that whole team deserve a lot of credit. I mean, it seemed like Miami lost, Texas A&M lost. You're just sort of looking at their coaching staff saying, all right, who's going to be the interim here? You know, it's just a matter of time. And, you know, those guys have stayed bought in. They've won three of their last four. And the one loss, they took Tennessee to overtime. And frankly, I think they should have went for the win and went for two in regulation.
In Knoxville.
And had a chance to win that thing. But, no, I think that I'm really fascinated to see how this game plays out. I do think that they've got some momentum. I think that it's sort of been a blessing in disguise to have DJ Lagway playing now. Obviously, you don't want Graham Mertz getting hurt. But to turn it over to a young guy to kind of show the potential of the future, I mean, I think that bodes well if Billy Napier were to get a fourth year in Gainesville. And, you know, that DJ's going to have to show up and make plays on Saturday. I was really impressed and sort of struggling to comprehend the numbers last week. He only completed seven passes, but it was for about 240 yards. I mean, he did not have a completion against Kentucky, I should say, 2 weeks ago, that didn't go for at least 20 yards. So for Georgia, I mean, with this game, I think it just kind of boils down to limiting those explosives. And I think it kind of sets up, not unlike that Auburn game against Georgia, where Auburn came in and it felt like they were at their most dangerous when they were creating those explosive plays. For the most part, Georgia limited those explosive plays, especially through the air. That has been Florida's strength as far as creating big plays through the air. I think if Georgia does that, they'll be able to take care of business. But again, Florida deserves a lot of credit for where they're sitting. It looked like early in the year it could be really, really bad.
Unfortunately for Florida, this is the start of what could be the most brutal stretch to end the season of college football. Number 2, Georgia, at number 6, Texas, number 16, LSU, number 19, Ole Miss, and they do get a blessing since Florida State's not any good. But, I mean, that's the most horrific November I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how it plays out. You know, before the season, I picked Florida to upset LSU, and we'll see if that actually happens. But you know, I think if he wins two of those games, I think Billy Napier probably gets a fourth year because, in part, you got the promise of that young quarterback. You know, if you fire Billy, you know, how good do you feel that DJ Lagway is going to hang around? I mean, it's a 50-50 shot at best. And you look at Florida's schedule next year, it's not any easier because it's just those same SEC games but flipped from away and home and vice versa. So I think he's still got a chance to hang around. It's definitely not an easy close to the year, but I think they've got a chance to show enough to get him one more year in Gainesville.
Georgia and Florida this Saturday, 2:30 in the neutral site game that's on ABC that you can check out. A huge game for the Dogs as they try to continue their search for a college football playoff. We're talking with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. He's with us every Wednesday here on ESPN. And believe it was last night, Jordan, where Georgia basketball was back home at Stegman Coliseum for an exhibition against UCF as they look to open up the season this coming Monday. Were you there? Can you tell us what happened last night?
Yeah, it was actually really impressive. Georgia won 114-76.
Whoa!
It honestly wasn't that close. Georgia had put in some walk-ons late in the game. And UCF kind of closed the gap, but very impressive. I thought that Georgia starting lineup especially showed that they're ready to take a step forward this year. Blue Kane led the scoring with 20 points, had 6 rebounds, just did a really good job all the way around. 5-star Asa Newell. I think what was most impressive, it wasn't a crazy night from him, and then you look up and he had 19 points and 7 rebounds. I mean, it was a very productive first game, albeit an exhibition, in Stegman Coliseum. I think who impressed me the most, I think a guy that some Auburn fans will remember, former Vanderbilt guard Tyron Lawrence. Very impressive exhibition performance, showed that he was willing to get to the hole, take on contact, still make shots. I mean, he had several and-one opportunities in that game. I think that there should be a lot of excitement about this Georgia team. They've gotten a whole lot bigger in Mike White's third season. They were projected to finish 12th in the SEC. I think they're very much capable of doing more than that. I had them ninth in the preseason vote for Media Day. I think they are very much in a position where they can finally return to the NCAA tournament. This is by far Mike's best team. They'll start the season this upcoming Monday against Tennessee Tech. I think there's a lot of reason for excitement. And I'll tell you, Jacob, I'm excited to watch this team. I think that they are fully capable of being a team to watch throughout the year.
Well, I mean, we saw it last year, and you and I having the opportunity to talk every single week last year about just you talked so much about how this team was there, right? They were on the brink of I don't know if you want to say turning the page or turning the corner, but they've definitely gotten better. And you could see that building at the end of last year. And now that they got some really good talent in there, I think it's all going to come together.
Yeah, I give credit to Mike White and his staff. I mean, there were times that it didn't look like things were going well. I think about last February, they had a really rough stretch. And to their credit, you know, they played well into the SEC tournament. They lost their second game in the tournament. They get into the NIT because Ole Miss turns it down, and they made the most of it. They made a semifinal run, wound up losing to, I believe, the eventual champion, Seton Hall. And, you know, they've recruited really well. I mean, they brought in 9 new guys this offseason. They kept a very valuable core. 3 guys from last year, 3 freshmen, Silas Demery Jr., Blue Kane, and Dylan James. And, again, I think this team's excited about its potential. They looked really good. I think what impressed me the most last night was you didn't get the sense that this was a team with 9 new guys. I thought the communication looked really good. Things to clean up for sure. You know, a handful of turnovers you could have back, a little bit better defense on the 3-point shot. But I think this team has a lot of potential, and super excited to watch them as this season gets underway.
He writes for Dogs247. He is Jordan Hill. He's with us every Wednesday here on ESPN 106.7, talking all things Georgia athletics, football, and basketball. It's crossover season is officially next week. Jordan, plug it on, my man. Tell people where they can find you and all your wonderful coverage.
Definitely, Dogs247.com, on Twitter at Jordan Davis Hill, on Twitter at Dogs247. And, yeah, getting ready for the start of the basketball season. On Monday, I'll have a big feature on Asa Newell, the 5-star that I had mentioned. Super excited to write that. And I have the football coverage down in Jacksonville. Looking forward to another trip down to Florida to see the Bulldogs and the Gators. So busy time of year, no doubt, but definitely enjoy it and looking forward to giving folks a lot to read over these next few days.
Safe travels down to Jacksonville, my friend, and we appreciate your time as always.
Absolutely. Enjoyed it.
Thanks so much, Jordan Hill, Dogs247. Check him out at Dogs247.com for all of your Georgia coverage. Football team, again, still making their way, trying to get to a college football playoff. And look, if you were with us a year ago, I'm not blowing smoke, and neither is Jordan. He talked highly of this Georgia men's basketball program and how they are getting better. They're not going to be a team to mess with this year. I'm just telling you right now, they got some talent, they got the coach, and the pushover that Georgia has been, I don't think that exists anymore. We got to take our final break in hour number one. We'll come back, wrap it all up, and get into hour number two. Reminder, Daryl Dapprich of Locked On Auburn joins us at 3:15, so you've got until then to get in on the phone lines. 334-321-1390.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
We wrap up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Shout out to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. He's awesome, man. He's such a nice dude and a great friend, and covers Georgia better than anybody I've found so far. And he's just always so gracious with his time and has so much good information about Georgia and what's going on over in Athens. And so, yeah, the football team, they've got Florida this week, and I just can't get over. I can't get over what Florida has to go through, man. Florida, I mean, they should riot or rebel or something to the SEC. Georgia, Texas, LSU, Ole Miss, all in a row. At least three of them are at home, but what is that worth right now? I don't know. I don't know how much that's worth. I mean, A&M is the only team. Well, no, Miami beat them there in Gainesville too, right? That wasn't neutral site. Hold on, let me look. That was in Gainesville. So, yeah, my point stands. What is a home game worth to Florida right now? Probably not a whole lot. But to the point we've been making on this show for quite some time and what Jordan was just talking about, like, okay, you fire Billy Napier. Now what? What are you going to do? He's won three of his last four. You can't fire the guy now, right? And what if you fire him in the middle of all that crap? What's that going to do? You're going to give the keys to an interim coach and say, here you go. Good luck. Here comes LSU, here comes Ole Miss, and don't lose to that Florida State team, even though they're bad, and it's on the road, don't you dare lose. Like, what good is that going to do? The problem that Florida has is their recruiting is abysmal. Their recruiting is horrific. Have you seen Florida's team ranking so far? According to 247, in 2025... I'm still scrolling. They're not even in the top 50. They're not even in the top 50. They're 51st in the country in 2025. I don't even know what they are in 2026. Let's find out as we get to break. What is this? Let's see. Scrolling. Oh, they are 14th in 2026. Fine. Still not good enough, but at least it's better than 51st in the country. Whew, man, I'd hate to be Billy Napier right now. Good thing is I'm not. And the good news is we got a whole nother hour of the show coming up. Daryl Dapperidge is with us at 3:15, and you can be a part of the show as well. 334-321-1390, hour number two, coming up.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. If you missed any of hour number one, you can go back and listen to the podcast. And I know we had some issues with the Monday show, but that is up and running now, so you can catch that and yesterday's show and today's show and all of our shows from On the Line and The Drive. They're all on ESPNAU.com. That is our station website. You can find that and go listen to past shows, any parts of the shows that you missed. And in hour number one, we talked to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. We talked to him about Georgia football coming off the bye week as they are taking on Florida this weekend, neutral site there in Jacksonville. And then Jordan had a lot of good things to say about Georgia basketball and their exhibition game last night against UCF. Dropped 100 and something points. My goodness, 100 and something points. What do you say? 117, I think? Good Lord, that is insane for Georgia basketball. So that was in hour number one. We also started to flip the page into this weekend of college football, looked around the SEC, looked around the college football landscape, games that are going to be impacting the college football playoff this weekend. So all of that was in hour number one. And here in hour number two, we're going to flip the page, start talking Auburn and Vanderbilt a little bit. And then coming up at 3:15 to 3:45 is Double D, Daryl Dapprich from Locked On Auburn. He'll be with us to talk Auburn, Kentucky, Auburn, Vandy, and Auburn basketball. All of that is going to be here in hour number two. So until then, you can get in on the show. You can be a part of it on the phone lines, 334-321-1390. Again, that number, 334-321-1390, or you can shoot me a text in the on-the-line text box. That number is 334-784-1067. And before we get into content, want to remind you that hour number two, each and every day, here on ESPN 106.7 during On the Line, is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them bringing you the second hour each and every day from 3 to 4 p.m. here on ESPN. Well, we flipped the page right in college football, SEC, or outside in the top 25, talking about Texas A&M, South Carolina, Ohio State, Penn State, those types of games. But here locally, it's time to flip the page for Auburn. It's time to flip from Kentucky to Vanderbilt. And it's so funny in college football, in college basketball, sports in general, really, where you get the schedule to start the season. And immediately, and we all do it, we're all guilty of this, myself included, we want to sit down and try to predict what's going to happen at the very start. All the way through game one to the end of the season, we want to predict what we think is going to happen. And we do that basing it off of what we think all of these other teams are going to do and how they're going to perform and what they will be like when your team goes up against them. And of course, the longer and the deeper you get into the season, the harder it is to predict what a team is going to be like. And I say all of that because Vanderbilt is usually one that gets written off at the very start, right? This is a Vanderbilt program that has just not been good for basically its entire existence. It's had glimpses every now and then, right? Glimpses here and there. But in terms of a consistent thing, they're consistently bad. That's just what Vanderbilt has been. But for the, maybe the third time in my life, they're actually good. And you can see that in all eight games that they have played, which is so crazy. When you start looking at this schedule, right? They beat Virginia Tech week one. We're like, oh, wow, good for Vanderbilt, right? That's what everybody said. Oh, good for them. That's cute. Good for them. They got an upset win in week one. Maybe they will get to three wins if they win their non-conference games. They beat Alcorn State. And then everybody looked at that Georgia State game and said, eh, that's fine. We were worried about it before, but it's Georgia State. What could go wrong? And then Vanderbilt did what Vanderbilt does, and they lost 36-32. And so then, at that point, everybody said, oh, we're done. They're Vanderbilt. Moving on. And nobody wanted to waste their time on them, because you never waste your time on Vanderbilt. It's been a disaster every time that you do. And it's been a waste of time, right? Well, then they turn around and they go on the road to, at this point in the season, was a number seven team in the country, Missouri. And they coulda, shoulda, woulda beat Missouri, right? They coulda, shoulda beat Missouri, I think you could say. They took them to overtime and just couldn't quite seal the deal. So then everybody started saying, are they real? Are they legit? Is Vanderbilt good? He said with a question mark. All they did the next game was come out and beat the number one team in the country, the Alabama Crimson Tide. They then backed it up with a win over Kentucky, a win over Ball State, and a one-possession loss to Texas. It was two possessions. We know that. They scored late to make it look a little bit better. But, folks, I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. Vanderbilt's a good team. And they are very capable, more than capable, of beating Auburn on Saturday afternoon inside of Jordan-Hare Stadium. Diego Pavia's done it once, and he can do it again. And I know that that's the glaring topic here, right? That's the thing that everybody wants to talk about. It's the big storyline going into the game Saturday. Can Diego Pavia beat Hugh Freeze for the third time in his career? A guy that Hugh Freeze said he's, quote, tired of seeing. Yeah, I'm sure you are, coach. I'm sure you are tired of seeing this guy because he's got your number. But not just yours. He's got a lot of people's numbers. Diego Pavia is the real deal. And at least for today, well, I can't guarantee what Daryl says, so I'll at least say, at least for this segment, I'll avoid the whole "don't you wish you would have got him" conversation with Diego Pavia and Auburn. But Vanderbilt is good enough to win this game. They're good enough to win their next game. They're good enough to win the rest of their games. Now, it's going to be tough because their final five-game stretch, including the loss at Texas, was Texas at Auburn, South Carolina at LSU, and Tennessee to wrap up the regular season. That's not an easy stretch, and they probably won't win many of those games. But they think they can, and they know they can, and they play like they can. And I think that's something that is known right now, but is not being talked about enough. Because you got to think, the way that everybody has talked about Vanderbilt for, again, basically my entire life and a lot of your lives as well, however old or young you are, everybody's talked about this Vanderbilt team as the worst team in the SEC in football, right? They're a bottom dweller. They're a write-off game. It's a gimme win. Like, everybody's talked down about this program for so long. And for most of the time, they played like it. Yeah, they've got a win here and there, right? They've beaten some really good teams in their time, just not consistently. And for so long, I think Vanderbilt played that way. It would be impossible not to. If you were a former player at Vanderbilt, and all you did was win three games a year because the SEC just knocked you around for 8 or 9 games. Like, it would be nearly impossible to not subconsciously adapt that way of thinking of, we're just Vanderbilt. But that's what makes this team different right now. That's what makes Vanderbilt football as a program different right now. In 2024, it's more different than it's ever been. And I give 100% credit to Clark Lea, their head coach, who when he was hired, he took the main stage at SEC Media Days, his very first one, and he said with a straight face, "We expect to compete for championships at Vanderbilt." And you know what everybody did? Everybody in the media, they laughed at him. They laughed at him and pointed fingers and said, "You're an idiot. How dare you think that way? Why in the world would you ever think that that's possible at Vanderbilt?" And it may not be. But good for him for at least thinking that way and having the mindset and trying to better a program that has seen good days before. You remember James Franklin? He did it. So Clark Lea wanted to be the next one. And here we are. He went and got a quarterback. He went and got some really good players on the defensive side of the football. And now he's got Auburn fans scared to death of Vanderbilt coming down here and beating them inside of Jordan-Hare Stadium. That's the Clark Lea effect. That's the Diego Pavia effect. That's the transfer portal effect. So good for Vanderbilt. And I'm really looking forward to an exciting game this weekend. And I'm also looking forward to talking to Daryl Dapperich about the Auburn-Kentucky game from last weekend and getting his full thoughts on Auburn and Vanderbilt. Double D Wednesday with Daryl Dapperich of Locked On Auburn. He joins us next here on ESPN 106.7.
the Line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
It's that time. It's that time. It's Double D Wednesday with Daryl Daprich of Locked On Auburn. My man, how are you? It's so good to talk to you, my friend.
It's good to talk after a win, isn't it? Man, what a difference. It's been a very long time since me and you have had a conversation after a W. So
yeah, it's been over a month.
That's really nice.
Over a month.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure has.
It's been... It almost just got to where it was the expectation, right? And then all of a sudden you step in on the Monday and it's like, wait a minute, we're talking about a win. We're talking about a victory. We're talking positive about Auburn football and this football program and what the end of the season could be. So, Daryl, the floor is yours, my friend. Auburn beats Kentucky. They get their first SEC win of the year, and it seems like the vibes are going in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, I think you make a really good point when you say that was the expectation. And I believed all along that that was going to be the expectation until Auburn proved otherwise. And I felt like it was one of those deals where, you had to show, they had to show the fans that they could close out a ball game, that they could overcome some of those poor habits that got them beat, that they could, the defense could make a stop. When all the different variables that caused Auburn to lose games during that stretch, until you saw that reversed, that was the expectation. And I think that's why it was really important what happened Saturday night, was not only that Auburn won for the first time against a Power Four opponent since last November, they did it on the road. That was very important. There was not a team in college football that needed to win more than Auburn did. But I think how they won was just as important. Meaning that they fell behind 10-0. Some of the old bad habits reared their ugly head again. Poor play clock, poor clock management, turnover, that interception, the penalty where you ground the football, not knowing the rule that if you receive it on a flea flicker, doesn't matter if you're in or out of the pocket, you can't ground the football. Missed field goals, all the things that just seemed really familiar. But Auburn was able to answer. Every time something like that happened, they held, and then they had an answer. And then finally, the young defense gets off the field on fourth down with that great goal line stance. And I think that this could be one of those games and the moments within the game that can turn a season around. Now, what does that look like? Does it look like going to a bowl game? Does it look like winning the next two and having a shot against a top 10 A&M team and a perhaps top 10, top 12 Alabama team? I don't know what it looks like. But if you win a couple in a row, if you beat Vanderbilt and La Monroe, and you give yourself a chance to split late in the season, you would have to say that the season got turned around to some extent.
Am I crazy in saying, Daryl, that it's not even about the making the actual bowl game? It's just about getting some wins strung together and having some positive momentum going into the offseason for the current team, the recruits, and for the fans?
No, I agree. That's exactly what my point that I was making is that you could win three in a row and get into that Texas A&M game, and just the idea of Auburn's won three in a row and now – they've got a shot to go to a bowl game if they split the last two is enough. The problem is where these games are sandwiched. Like if losing two to end the season and missing out a bowl game would hurt with some momentum and some goodwill built up. So if you look back at it and go, my God, why didn't the Texas A&M game get to be played when Auburn played Oklahoma, and flip those where, because it would be a completely different situation, I think. I mean, I think Auburn would have lost to Texas A&M early in the season like they did Oklahoma, but I think Auburn would have had a really good chance to beat Oklahoma at home the second to last week of the season playing how they are now. So, but I mean, stranger things have happened in college football. Texas A&M ain't, the early 90s Nebraska or some. I mean, they've lost a game. They may be looking past Auburn having to play Texas. Think about it. Jacob, if Auburn goes into that game on a three-game win streak, mm-hmm. and is they would be 5-5 at that time, and A&M is in the top 10 in the country, playing for a possible playoff and berth in the SEC championship, the
the buzz around that game is going to be incredible. And how is A&M going to get up 2 weeks in a row having to play Texas right after that? So, yeah, you got to give yourself a chance to even be put in that conversation, and that means winning the next two, starting with Saturday, which is the biggest game on Auburn's schedule to date.
Unfortunately, Jimbo Fisher's no longer at Texas A&M, so we can't rely on him to screw it up, which seemed to be a given every single year. And that's what a lot of people have talked about. I know this is going off the beaten path a little bit, but it just seems like Texas A&M, it is a little bit different. Do you think that, Darryl?
I do. I mean, I think the Jimbo Fisher thing sometimes is a little bit overblown, because dating back to the game where, you know, the national championship game, I think Jimbo Fisher ended up having 3 or 4 wins against Auburn. In his career, Auburn really owned Kevin Sumlin.
True,
but I think that it is different. I think Elko is a different type of coach. I think he's got more structure. I think that the 5 stars that Texas A&M got in that recruiting class a couple of years ago, that Nick Saban, you know, basically was accusatory of Jimbo Fisher for buying that class, they are now being coached up. And it doesn't surprise me. I mean, unless a lot of those kids transferred out, which some did. But if you look at that recruiting class from 2022, and now we're in 2024, that's when it starts to mature and when they start to make a contribution. So I'm not surprised. I think, you know, Elko obviously is a good coach, and A&M has the athletes. There's no doubt. So, and I'm surprised at how offensively they've been so consistent with Wegman and running the football. It's going to be, and their front line is better than Kentucky's, in my opinion. So, you know, Auburn's going to have a hard time. I think I said that about Kentucky. What a genius I was, that Auburn's going to have a hard time running the ball against Kentucky. I'm surprised you even had me back on after that brilliant analysis.
Oh, we're getting there. Don't worry.
Yeah, thank you. But so, yeah, I think that's going to be a really, but again, the whole, when that game is being played and what the stakes could be and what the odds could be, Auburn could go into that game really with, like, no pressure, nothing to lose, severely hyped game, a lot of national attention, and make a statement.
That being the Auburn and Texas A&M game. But before we get to that, right, we got to recap what happened Saturday and preview what's coming up this Saturday. And it's funny you worded it the way you did, Darryl, because it seemed to be that Hugh Freeze and the offensive game plan that he likes to use all the time, right, seemed like the game plan was, oh, it's going to be hard to run the football. We may as well not even try. We may as well just start out by throwing the ball. And that's exactly what Auburn did. It just didn't go well. And then all of a sudden, the offensive line starts creating holes like they've been all doing all season long. And Jarquez Hunter starts ripping off big runs. And Auburn all of a sudden says, hey, let's run the ball. And it worked time and time and time again. It worked so well, Darryl, that Jarquez Hunter put up one of the best performances in an Auburn uniform.
Historical performance. 4th all-time behind Bo, Trey Mason, and Curtis Kuykendall, who, and by the way, no, I did not see that live against Miami when he went for 3 bills.
In the 40s?
But I think
just before your time.
1944, and I want to say this about that. I think that's a little, I mean, nothing against Curtis and his family if they're listening, but I think that record is a little tainted because there was something going on, a little thing called World War II in 1944, and you wonder if he was facing the best possible competition, if you catch my drift.
That may have had something to do with it. That's fair.
Yeah. So, anyway, I think that if you look at what happened is that Auburn decided that throwing it was not working. And so they thought, well, we're going to go down with what our best weapon is, running the football. Once they started running the football, go back and look at the kind of game Peyton Thorne had from the second quarter on, too. That gets lost in all this Jarquez Hunter.
Yes, it does.
Talk, and it should. Peyton Thorne, I think, at one point was 14 out of 15, had 9 completions in a row. The receivers were making big plays. He was making big throws. Go back and watch how many times a receiver for Auburn caught the ball short of the sticks and still got the first down by making a man miss or running over somebody. Peyton Thorne had a really good game from the second quarter on, a very good game, all because Auburn ran the football. He doesn't have those kind of stats. Those receivers aren't open where they were open had it not been for the way Jarquez Hunter and Damari Austin in a couple of drives ran the football. You started seeing things like Peyton Thorne rolling out in a wide-open Austin in the flat, which we've been begging for months. He just a little dump-down pass, 8 yards, and then Austin runs another 10 after. Those are the kind of plays, they're winning football plays. The Cam Brown catch I thought was huge on 3rd and 11 or 3rd and 12. It all started with Hunter. And the fact that Kentucky showed different fronts and multiple fronts and had such a really good defensive line and put 8 or 9 in the box, and Auburn still ran for over 350 on them, including Austin and Peyton Thorne had some big runs too. It's just amazing. And you were at the press conference when Hugh Freeze said, they kept showing me those fronts, and I was so tempted to throw it, but I didn't. I kept saying, don't throw it. That's, to me, a little bit of a maturation and a little bit of a growing up. Is it not a growing up? He's been coaching for a long time, but an adjustment of a coach.
I think it's a fair way to say it. At least growing up in this season, right, and accepting the fact that change had to be made and that it could work.
Well, I get it because he is one of those guys that to the core of his being likes to throw it, loves to throw it. It's part of his DNA. Sometimes, though, you don't need to just force what you think you are and go, this is the kind of coach I am. By God, I'm going to do it. Old expression that I heard and they talked about, I've used this line a lot, and it really applies to Hugh Freeze and what he needs to do this year. We've talked about how coaches a lot of times try to coach to their philosophies, not the personnel that they have.
Yep.
Meaning you got to adapt. You got to go against what's in your being and in your DNA sometimes. Herb Brooks, that was the coach of the 1980 U.S. Olympic hockey team that upset Russia, had one of the best quotes about coaching. He said, I coach what I have, not what I want.
Boom.
And that is very, very, very precise in coaching to your personnel. Making sure that, like, for instance, when I saw Jarrett Stidham go against Purdue with 5 wides and set all kind of Auburn records in that waxing of Purdue in the Music City Bowl, you're going, where's this been all year?
Yep.
Instead of the Chandler Cox cat and spin around and doing all this stuff, why didn't they just put Stidham in the shotgun and let him go 5 wide? And you coach what he did it. Other coaches have done it when they ran the wheels off Kerryon Johnson and ran the wheels off Trey Mason. Nothing wrong with winning boring, but if that's what it takes to win, then Jarquez Hunter needs to get 25 carries Saturday, period.
And I'm with you. And I think there's a fine line there, Daryl, as we're getting to break. I think there's a fine line when a coach's young career in terms of where he's at, Hugh Freeze, a year and a half in, where you coach what you have until you have what you need to coach your philosophy. And I think Hugh Freeze wants to get there, and I think we jumped the gun a little bit on that, but it seemed that Saturday he figured that out against Kentucky. The question now becomes, will he figure it out against Vanderbilt offensively and defensively? We're talking Auburn-Vandy when we come back with Double D, Darrell Dapperich here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
On the Line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz, and we got about 15 more minutes or so with Double D, Darrell Dapperich of Locked On Auburn. You could catch him a couple of times a week on the Locked On Auburn podcast. And now in his writing era where he's doing some Auburn football written work and doing a little basketball written work, right, Darrell?
Yes. As the season will get kicked off, I will be doing these DAP recaps where I do, a few takeaways from the game. I've been doing those for football, putting those in the barnauburn.com, the new website community that's been around for a few months that some of us are in. And that's where those go after the games. And they'll be doing that for basketball as well.
Well, quickly, I guess, while we're on that subject, the exhibition game versus Furman, were you able to catch that and have any thoughts on that?
Well, I did. I was following along. Obviously it wasn't on TV or wasn't streamed or anything. But I think the biggest thing that I took away from it was just Auburn has so much depth and so much length and talent that different lineup combinations are going to be. going to be there for a while. And, you know, they had a lot of steals, a lot of blocks. They struggled shooting the basketball a little bit from three-point land. But Miles Kelly did not play. That's a, you know, don't underestimate that. Miles Kelly, in my opinion, will be a key member of this basketball team from a scoring standpoint. Chad Baker-Mazar didn't start. They used a couple different, you know, lineup combinations. They started Broom and Cardwell at the same time, which I don't think will happen when the season starts, but that, you will see that some during the game. So I think that's the thing to take away from it. And it was, you know, Auburn won by 21, not playing its, you know, best basketball in the first half. And Bruce Pearl, you know, likened it to having to go to Appalachian State last year, a mid-major on the road in their arena. And so, you know, Auburn coming away with a 21-point victory without its one of its best players left at home sick and trying different lineup combinations, pretty impressive. And looking forward to seeing what happens Friday night with Florida Atlantic, that game being played at Neville Arena, seeing if there's, you know, Miles Kelly will be able to go, if there's more of a consistent lineup rotation. Same old thing. You know, Auburn's going to play 10 or 11 guys.
Yeah.
And they're going to come at you in waves. And it's up to Bruce Pearl to find those combinations. Remember how much last year Auburn would be up like 6 or 7, and then he would bring in certain bench players, and you'd look and you'd blink, and they'd be up 20? I mean, that second wave would come in. And I think that's important. And I think Auburn's looking for that same type of boost off the bench, but I just think their starting five is going to be so good and so deep that it's just going to be a different team.
And I think a lot of teams around the SEC, I think the starting fives in this conference are going to be really, really talented and really good across the board. We were talking with our friend Jordan Hill from Athens, from Georgia earlier, and I think that's going to be the case for them. But then it's 6 through 8, right? 6 through 10. How good are they going to be? And Darryl, this may be a difficult question to ask and answer. It may not be fair, but do you think that Auburn will play that many guys all year, or maybe in February, March, they start to trim down the bench a little bit and take their core 7 guys into the tournament?
I don't think it's going to be 7. I think anything you've seen from Bruce Pearl the last 3 or 4 years, that it's at least 9.
Sure.
You may see 1 or 2 drop off, like Lior Berman and Chris Moore did last year. Remember, they got very limited minutes late, and I think Auburn went to basically 9 or 10. But you think about it. I mean, you've got, in the backcourt, you got 4 guys that need to see playing time. On your wings, you've got 2, that's 6. You've got 2 4 men that need to see playing time, that's 8. And then you have Cardwell, that's 9 or right there. I mean, so, and that doesn't include, you know, a Chris Moore or a Jaheim Hudson, who came in and played really, really well, the transfer from UNLV, or I think it was UNLV. He played at Georgia State before. He came in and played really well from a rebound. I think he had 6 rebounds in like 8 minutes. So, no, I think, I mean, you know, conventional wisdom says that a Chris Moore and maybe Hudson doesn't play as much when you get into the deep part of the SEC tournament. But I don't know. If Hudson can come off the bench and give you instant defense and instant rebounding, at the 4 position to back up Chaney Johnson, you're going to see, I think you'll still see 9 or 10 when we're into February as far as rotation.
I'm excited, man. This team's going to be so electric. And again, I think the SEC is just going to be really, really good this year in college basketball. We're talking with Darryl Dapperich from Locked On Auburn. You can catch him on that podcast a couple of times a week, and he's with us every Wednesday from 3:15 to 3:45. Let's get back to football here, Darryl, because Wednesdays on this show are about flipping the page and looking ahead and getting into what's coming up in the next weekend. And for Auburn, that is Vanderbilt, who comes to town. The Tigers are back inside of Jordan-Hare Stadium, a place they have not been in over a month. And it's a familiar name playing quarterback, which seems to be the big storyline. But what I've been trying to tell people is Vanderbilt's a good team, not just a good quarterback.
Yeah, I think he's got weapons that he didn't have in New Mexico State. I think he really had to put that team. But don't underestimate that New Mexico State team last year. They won 10 games, so they were pretty good. They did have some talent. But Pavia is going to come in with full of confidence because he's already done it. He's already beaten Auburn at Jordan-Hare before. He's a gunslinger. He's got swagger. He's unflappable. He's one of those kids that just gets the most every ounce out of his ability at the quarterback position. He's a winner. He reminds me of a poor man's Johnny Manziel without all the controversy, right? And I don't mean that as a knock. Yeah. But he just, you know, he doesn't get the hype. I mean, Johnny Manziel won the Heisman. So he reminds you of just that kind of guy. So, you know, Manziel beat Auburn in Auburn. And then the next year, Auburn schemed for him, defended it pretty good, had to score 40-something points to win the game. But I think DJ Durkin's had this one circled for a while. I know Hugh Freeze has. I know Hugh Freeze has just been very, very hands-off when it comes to defensive planning and defensive game plans. And I think Durkin is not Ron Roberts. And so as long as Auburn doesn't do stupid things and let Pavia extend drives, extend drives, and, you know, hold him three and out, heat him up a little bit, hit him, you know, not dirty hits, but make sure he feels it every time he lets the ball go.
There you go.
Put a spy on him, maybe with Riddick. You got to make sure that you don't allow, you know, if you do get a three and out, don't commit a stupid penalty to keep the drive going. Look, the thing about Vanderbilt that's very frustrating is that they run an offense. Hugh Freeze compared them to Navy, as you heard in the press conference. They just eat chunks and chunks and chunks of clock, and you may get limited possessions in this game. You may not get the amount of possessions and run the amount of plays you're used to running, so you dang well better make the most out of the ones you get. Last year, I was covering the game in Nashville when Auburn played Vanderbilt, and Auburn blew Vanderbilt out but did not touch the ball for the first time till 5 minutes left in the first quarter. So you can't get frustrated if you're on the Auburn sidelines and you're the Auburn offense. You need to understand that you may get two possessions a quarter, but you got to make the most out of those possessions. And your defense has to get off the field, and try to you do everything you can to make Pavia be the one that beats you. You say, look, he's got to be the one. We're going to do everything. I mean, you don't let him beat you. I mean, you do everything you can to take him out of the game plan and say, we'll let anybody else on Vanderbilt's team beat us, but not him, not number three. We're going to make sure that we do whatever we can to not let him, that Diego, beat us. And if somebody else, like a running back, has a great game, or, you know, Vanderbilt's defense rises up or special teams beat you, you live with that. You don't let Pavia beat you. You throw everything you can to make sure that doesn't happen.
I say Vanderbilt is a good team and not just a good quarterback because I think their defense is very solid, Daryl, but you look at what they did a week ago against Texas, and I say this for two reasons that I'll give in just a second. Diego Pavia against Texas, 16 of 29, just 143 yards through the air, two touchdowns and two interceptions. He was also the leading rusher for Vanderbilt that day with 16 carries and 67 yards and a touchdown. I would say that's keeping him in check, but I also believe that Vanderbilt, maybe they don't have a ton on the outside and outside of Pavia that Auburn should be focusing on just number two rather than, like you said, a running back or a receiver or whatever.
Yeah, number two. I said number three. I think that you take those numbers all day long if you're Auburn. If somebody said, would you take those Auburn numbers from him going into the game, you would. Maybe the rushing yards are a little high. You try to reduce those. But you'd take, you know, the two touchdowns, I don't know. If he throws two picks, I think you would be satisfied with those numbers that you just read, except I would not want him to rush for 60-something yards.
And a touchdown.
You know, defensively, I think that they get a little bit of recognition for, you know, what they did. They gave a lot of points up to Alabama. They lost to Georgia State. Ball State got in the 20s. I mean, you know, I don't know. Statistically, I don't have it in front of me where they are. I do think they struggle a little bit stopping the run.
That struggles to stop the run, you say?
Yeah, you better run it 25 times. I mean, you better – just Jarquez Hunter better touch it 25 times. I think that if Kentucky had a problem containing Jarquez Hunter, I think Vanderbilt will. And that's a great strategy to employ because, A, it limits turnovers. There's not as much risk there putting the ball up in the air and getting it picked off. And it also keeps Pavi on the sidelines. So that's kind of what Auburn's going to have to do, I think, in my opinion.
is this a game where I feel like we say this all the time about Auburn in particular, which is crazy, but is this more about just Auburn playing well and Auburn winning the game versus focusing on Vanderbilt so much and what they could do to beat you? I mean, is it more about Auburn than it is Vanderbilt on Saturday?
Yes, because I feel strongly that with Auburn playing at home and having come off that game with Kentucky, that their confidence is going to be a lot better. They're going to be a lot more sure of themselves and have a lot more belief, and that they found their offensive identity. They have an identity now. So I think if Auburn just is, it takes care of Auburn and plays to their capabilities and does what they do well and limits, again, the mental errors, the mistakes that keep rearing their ugly heads, you know, they can cause a turnover or two. Special teams seems to be back on track. If Auburn just plays well and takes care of Auburn, I think Auburn wins this game. If they don't and they do some of the things they've done in the past, Pavia is not Vandegrift or that cat that Kentucky had in as the backup. He will make you pay for your mistakes. The Kentucky quarterbacks did not. So you cannot give him that opportunity. Auburn takes care of Auburn. Auburn wins. It's just, you know, in fact, I'm going to go on the record and say I can see Auburn winning this football game 23-17. That's my prediction.
Wow. Okay. So where do you stand on the fact that Auburn's a 6.5-point favorite? Is that weird to you?
You know, everyone's asked me that, and I agree it is. I mean, Zach and I did the reaction show, and the line hadn't come out yet Saturday night. Zach's like, well, look for Vanderbilt to be about a 2 or 3-point favorite. And I said, not so fast, my friend. I think it's going to be a pick 'em, or Auburn will be favored by 1 or 2. And he's like, well, why? And I said, I don't know, Vanderbilt on the road, you know, Auburn having coming off this win, I don't see it being, I see it being a pick 'em. No way did I ever expect Auburn to be favored. Now it's up to 7.
Gosh.
They are begging you to take Vanderbilt.
Vegas knows something we don't, Daryl.
Somebody knows something. I'm just going to put it to you that way.
Yep.
Yep.
I always say the buildings are nice in Vegas for a reason, my friend. They know something
well, they
that
are.
We might not
well,
know.
Well, because the mafia bought them at first. Remember that?
That's
we're
true.
The ones that kind of set all that up.
I'm glad you take credit for that, bro.
Well, I mean, they did. Do you know the history of Las Vegas?
I do.
I mean, it was just a big desert until some of those families, in quotation marks, decided to make some investments and put some casinos out there.
Some investments.
It grew since then. So,
oh,
there
gosh.
You go.
Well, Auburn and Vanderbilt this Saturday. You are not here for this game, is that right? Because you're not with me next
week. I actually will be at the Arizona Central Florida game. I've got
that?
An anniversary trip playing with my wife, 30 years of marriage.
Well,
and
congratulations.
My kids are joining us. And so, thank you very much. So, this has been on the radar for a long time. Arizona, where I used to, you know, live out there and follow them, they're playing Gus in Central Florida. So, we'll be down there anyway, celebrating our anniversary. So we're going to check out the Arizona game, and then I'm just again, it's an anniversary trip, 30 years. I'm taking a little break next week.
Good for you, my friend. You deserve it, and congratulations to you and your wonderful wife and family. That is fantastic for you to get out and take a break for just a little bit of what has been a crazy football season and basketball season cranking up next week. I mean, it's about to be all up in with crossover season, Daryl. So we're always appreciative of you and your time, and you know that I'm appreciative of your friendship more than you probably know. And so thank you again for your time. Tell people where they can find you and everything you got going on, man.
You can get to me Wednesdays and Fridays on Locked On Auburn with Zach Blackman. Normally on Saturdays, the reaction show, we go live, and then we drop one on Sunday as well. TheBarnAuburn.com. And then with you, 3:15 on Wednesdays, Ben Taylor, 7:10 over there on WANI on Monday mornings.
Still doing that
so,
show,
yeah.
Huh, Daryl?
Pardon me?
I said still doing that with him, huh?
Still doing it, yeah.
I'm sorry.
We have a good time. So, yeah, it's fun. It's a good time. So, yeah, all over the place, a lot of radio hits, Mobile, Oxford. So, yeah, it's been a good time. But next week, radio silence. People will be very excited.
Much to, no. I tell you this all the time, and I'm not blowing smoke. You are a fan favorite around here, man.
Well, I appreciate that very much. Apparently, I don't know what the bigger upset is, Northern Illinois beating Notre Dame or somebody finding someone to stay 30 years with me in marriage. So we'll see what Vegas says about that.
Yeah, what are the odds on that, right?
The over-under was 22. I've killed it.
You've crushed it. You're still making money, Darryl. Still making money. Hey, man, thanks again for your time. Enjoy your time off, man. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Thanks so much. Darryl Daprich, Locked On Auburn. Check him out wherever you get your podcasts. He's with Zach Blackerby a couple days a week, and he's with me every Wednesday from 3:15 to 3:45-ish. We typically go long, but we just have too much fun to get off the phone. So we got to take our final break, come back and wrap it all up here on a Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Shout out to Darryl Daprich. 30 years of marriage to his wonderful wife, man. That's impressive. I don't know what the stats are, especially nowadays, but for couples that are married for, heck, I feel like 10 years is a long time to be married. Now, let me give you some information here, some insider information. I'm not married. I know that surprises a lot of people that are listening or listen to this show on a daily basis, but I am not married. But the stats have to be extremely low for couples that stay married for 30 years, and Darryl's happily married for 30 years. I mean, that's a blessing for sure. So we're always appreciative of him and his time and hopping on the show each and every week. So he will not be with us next Wednesday. We will find a good way to fill that time next week with Auburn Talk anyway, Auburn Conversation. And so we'll have something special for you next Wednesday. Nothing can compare to what Darryl brings to the program, but we'll do our best. So he will hopefully have a good time, and he deserves a week off, and he'll be with us the following week here on the show. So we talked to Darryl today, and we also talked to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, got updates on Georgia football and basketball. Plus, we've had a lot of fun, just you and me, talking college football, games that will impact the SEC, impact the college football playoff, and talking a little Auburn-Vanderbilt today as well. And we're going to do that again tomorrow on the show, and it'll be jam-packed. We're going to have Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network. He's with me every Thursday at 2:30. We're also going to have Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC as well. I got to see if Coach Etheridge is good to come on tomorrow or not. Since we're on a bye, Auburn High football is. We're on a bye getting ready for the playoffs. We'll see what his schedule looks like. I'll talk to him tomorrow and get you a confirmation by the time we're on the air. So regardless, we're going to have Brad and Chris, possibly Coach Etheridge, but if not, we'll have more time for just you and me. So that's on the show tomorrow. And then Free for All Friday here in the studio. Lee Sterling is going to join us after starting the show on Friday. And then we'll talk Auburn Vandy. We'll pick SEC games, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And so some programming notes for here on ESPN really quickly. Coming up on the drive today, Tiger Takes with Eugene Asante. I sat down with him earlier this morning. So that'll be on the drive today, 5:30 here on ESPN. Brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. And since the Yankees decided they wanted to play baseball yesterday, we'll have Game 5 of the World Series tonight right here on ESPN Radio, so you could catch that right after the drive goes off today. And coming up tomorrow, we will have the exhibition game of Auburn women's basketball, the first broadcast from the Auburn Sports Network right here on ESPN 106.7. We will be getting everything going and to be honest with you, test it out, ready to go. So that way on Monday for the season opener for Auburn women's basketball, we are ready to go. So tomorrow you'll have the exhibition game, Auburn women's basketball. The drive will end 15 minutes early tomorrow, but I'll be sure to give you some more information, and Bill and Dan will give you some more information on that as well. Well, that's going to do it for today's episode. Again, be sure if you missed any of the show today, you can find the podcast version of it on our station website at ESPNAU.com. Okay, well, I'll go post it right now. I'll make sure it posted. It's been a little weird recently, but I'll make sure it gets up there so you can go back and listen. Another busy day tomorrow on the show, and we appreciate the Orthopedic Clinic for sponsoring hour number 2, 3 to 4 each and every day during On the Line. We're back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.